You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Thursday, 22nd of October. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, we're chatting with Viv Govender from Rand Swiss. Cashboard update, Cathay Pacific laying off, and that industry is just really in trouble, and there's ripple effects from that. Then I want to touch on Brexit. Man, stuff's got messy there. Absa changing their ETFs and Grant Field from Fed Group, the need for businesses to be able to change fast in order to survive. Some morning headlines from MoneyWeb. Storage's new 1.1 billion UK Rand billion UK self-storage JV with Moorfield going ahead. Business Day. Praveen Gordhan says the 10.5 billion Rand for SAA has full cabinet support. Morning markets are red across the board. US, we saw the S&P off 0.2%. NASDAQ down 0.3%. Asia, Sydney off 0.5% and Tokyo off 0.7%. Commodities red, gold $1,916 an ounce. Rand 16.40 against the dollar. An opening call for the top 40 this morning, looking for a red open about 0.8% lower.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Viv Govender. He's a portfolio manager at Rand Swiss. Viv, morning. Appreciate your time. Cashboard update yesterday. It's the first quarter of their financial year, which is July, August, September. Revenue up 22% in that period, like for like. Market loved it. We're seeing a lot of this. We've seen it out of the US as well with Lowe's and the like. I forget the other companies who are also in the same sort of DIY space. Imagine with that work from home, we're tired of looking at that cracked tile and dirty wall, and we're all rushing off and kind of fixing up our homes, and that really is playing into the DIY hardware store.
Yes, I think to a certain extent. I also think some people are looking at the low interest rate environment out there at the moment, and if you do have a secure job, if you work for government perhaps, this is an opportunity to get into a market that currently looks a lot cheaper than it did like a few months ago, because of course, you know, most people don't think about the total price, think about their monthly payments, and that also helps you around when it comes to either home renovations or home purchasing.
Yeah, that is a great point. Interest rates at 7% is seeing, particularly in the sort of lower cost houses. I've spoken with a couple of people that sub 1.2, 1.5 million. You're buying a house. You're going to do some work to it. You're going to spend some time fixing up a garden and maybe changing the walls and the like. And again, that is fixing into it. I suppose the question is how much this sort of continues on. My sense is it's probably a bit of a flash in the pan. And in the next, 6 months or so, will sort of revert back to normal as everyone's painted their walls and replaced their tiles.
I do think so as well. Also, I mean, eventually the numbers of people losing their incomes, people losing their jobs, will have to have an effect. I mean, so we have a temporary measure right now, but I think next year sometime we are going to see an impact on the economy. And yes, of course, certain sectors are going to be affected worse than others, not as badly. Mm-hmm. But overall, when you're losing 3 million, incomes, the Nuscrap survey said, or, the 2.3 million jobs, as, the Reserve Bank was talking about, those kind of things are going to have an effect on anything that has to deal with the consumer.
Yeah, and I mean, yesterday we heard news, Cathay Pacific cutting another, 5,900 jobs. We've seen airlines cutting, we've seen Disney cutting, but airlines, and more broadly than just Cathay Pacific, they're cutting because obviously demand has absolutely vanished. This is going to have ripple effects all the way through that leisure industry. I mean, it's a simple equation. People aren't flying into South Africa. We're losing tourists. That's happening everywhere. That is hurting sectors and rippling into other sectors at the same time.
Well, yeah, most certainly. And also, you've got to realize, there's some parts of the world have been faced. If you had any business with New Zealand, there's basically no travel in not New Zealand. They basically going to be out of commission for, until we get a vaccine effectively. Mm-hmm. That's what it seems like. And even like places that are, having travel come through because of COVID, there's certain places they don't let in. Even South Africa has countries that it doesn't want to, have travel in and out of, or there's these long delays and so on involved, or quarantines and so on. Look, I mean, I think travel to a large extent is going to be affected quite negatively just by the quarantine. And then after all, we are seeing, more people working from home, more telecommuting happening. We are seeing businesses under pressure that's going to eat into business travel as well. And of course, like I said, everywhere in the world we are seeing, except for China, every single economy is basically, coming down significantly. Every single economy in the world has a recession this year, except for, like I said, China. That obviously has an impact on discretionary spending like travel and tourism.
And this is going to be a longer-term impact. As you mentioned, the vaccine there, I mean, we'll probably get one, maybe late this year, early next year. But rolling it out to the 8 billion citizens of planet Earth, I mean, this is going to take a year or two. The travel will slowly start coming back. But normalcy in travel is truthfully years away. And normalcy, the December 2019 levels are perhaps even longer before we start getting back to that sort of, large levels of global travel and inter-country travel.
Yeah, look, I mean, the thing with people is that they know habits build. And when I first heard, heard of the lockdown, I thought, 2 months, 3 months, the lockdown is going to change the expectations. Yeah, because, I mean, I think the theory is that it's a month to change your habits or so on. But, I mean, we're talking about, something that's going to be going on for multiple years. We're talking about serious changes to how our culture works. And I'm not anywhere near smart enough to figure out how exactly that's going to play through, in terms of just how people are going to be different after 2 years of a very changed environment than they were before that time. You know what I mean? You've seen it in the past, like world wars and so on. It's almost like it's a different world thereafter. The world in 1939 is very different from the world in 1946. You know what I mean? 1930s world, 1950s world, it's very different. It wasn't just because of, time moving on. There was a big event in between that actually changed how people behaved, or the Great Depression, and so on. And I do think that that's something that could happen with the virus as well. I think people are going to have different expectations, different ideas about what travel is. But I think the main thing is actually business. I think we are testing the limits of what, teleconferencing is doing. I mean, I've been on more teleconferences in the last 6 months than I've been in my previous life. I think that's true for every single person in the world. And if it is true that teleconferencing can, to a certain extent, replace actual travel, people get used to meetings via Zoom. Yeah. If that is the case, I mean, business travel diminishes to a large extent. I don't know about tourism, because tourism, of course, is a consumption thing, but business travel is all about, getting things done. And if that seems to be something they can do to a large extent without actually getting on a plane, I think that's something that is going to be very difficult to bring back.
Yeah, but I agreed with that. And I've done more Zoom and other sort of virtual meetings than literally my entire life has happened. They've all happened in the last six months or so. Quickly before we talk in changes, Brexit, the negotiations between the UK and the EU seems to be going very, very messy. What's your take on it? I mean, this to me, it seems like it's going to fall apart. I don't know. I mean, it's a mess. This would be the headlines if we didn't have a pandemic in our place.
Yeah, and also, I mean, the problem is that, we are going to go through a tough period in the next couple of years. Europe is being hit especially bad. Despite what people say about the U.S. being hit quite badly and so on, the U.S. was in a better situation. So the way I think of it this way is, how many years is it going to take to recover the lost growth of the last, of the COVID period, basically? A place like Germany have lost like a decade of growth so far because of COVID. Mm-hmm. The U.S. has lost a couple of years because it grows faster. And I think the U.S. is probably going to come out of this quite a bit better. Europe, because of its split nature, Europe, because of its slow-growing economies and so on, is going to have a long period of, underperformance. Yes, some of these governments have spent a lot of money, but I mean, that's obviously going to have to be, worked out in the future. What I am saying is that you're going to have a large period of economic uncertainty, difficulty at the very least. And that's not a great thing to have, international disturbances between countries when you have a problem at home, because then it makes it very easy to blame the other guy. Oh, the UK, they'll say the European Union is being quite punitive. They've been mean to us effectively. In Europe, they'll say, no, the British are trying to break the rules and, not pay their fair share for blah, blah, blah. And I think that's one of the dangers around Brexit. If both countries of both regions, like the Europe and Britain, were doing quite well, you might even find that still difficult. But I think it's very dangerous in this current period to have such a tense negotiations two parties that are going to be going through such bad economic pain. And I don't think that's going to be a great thing for Brexit or for any kind of negotiation going forward.
Yeah, it's true. And there is all sorts of conflict there, not war conflict, but just economic conflict. Viv Govender, Portfolio Manager, Rand Swiss, appreciate your time this morning.
MoneyWeb now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Grant Field. He is CEO of Fed Group. Grant, morning. Appreciate your time. You put out a note earlier in the week. I mean, talking around a post-COVID-19 world. We're just talking with Viv, and he's saying it's almost impossible to get a sense of what it will look like. But in a sense, what you were talking about is that almost really decisions that were taken by corporates pre the pandemic is what's going to benefit them. And if your corporate structures are wrong, if they're too rigid and the like, it really does cripple decision making, make companies incredibly slow to respond. And a pandemic really, really shows that up in a negative light for those large companies, or positive for the nimble companies.
Yeah, morning, Simon. I think that's absolutely true. I, for the last number of years, have spoken about change and the fact that this world was changing at an incredible rate, and really have been an advocate for data-led decisions. So rather than, packs and reports that come out weeks or months afterwards, how do you get real-time data and be data-led in your decision-making and then have the right structures to execute? And, of course, COVID has just really changed the world quicker than anyone could ever have imagined. If you're not set up for that, we've seen people really battling.
Yeah, and that's the point. I mean, you make a note, when you started at Fed Group, almost 20 years ago, it was small things like, setting up servers, getting people onto email and the like, which, in the early 2000s was big and exciting. In a sense, just that sort of being ahead of the curve positions businesses in the right space. But for example, I imagine when work from home came around, Fed Group found that an easier process to manage.
Yeah, I mean, I think that our approach was, we forget that people didn't know what a lockdown was even going to look like.
Yeah.
But literally a week before lockdown, our main office was literally almost mothballed. It was closed up, and everyone was working from home, and all of that type of stuff was working, including knowing what people are up to and how it's going. So from that point of view, it was a much easier change for us, and I suppose anyone else who had that type of infrastructure. But I go back to that whole data component. There was a lot of knee-jerk reaction where people were making calls, trying to make calls quickly, but not necessarily being data-led. And I'm a real believer in that. So we always try to slow down all our decisions, make every decision as late as you can, but backed by the right data. And as soon as you make the decision, then make very strong, hard, specific calls.
And that's that data. That's that measurement. And I've visited your offices. I've seen the giant screens and the constant measurement, the constant feedback, which is arming employees with decisions and enabling those sort of conversations to happen. And as you say, enabling you to make decisions which are actually based in reality rather than hope. Particularly when, as you say, we've got a pandemic. We had no idea what lockdown means.
Well, I also think that over and above the pandemic, so much of the world has become so politicized. So you really are dealing in such uncertain times. So you can't rely on data that's a week old or a month old. Mm-hmm. You really need to understand all your vital numbers, everything from cash flow to whether servers are up to how social media is behaving on a certain day. And you need to have, rather than budgets and plans, you need to have scenarios and understanding your underlying levers. And so that just makes you a much more agile organization that can change with the times and be prepared for a number of scenarios rather than knowing your exact destiny.
Yeah, and that's almost, my sense then is if you're doing this right as a corporate, what you're getting rid of is those silos. You're not having, this team does that, and therefore, no one knows quite exactly what they do, but something goes in, something comes out. You want to get rid of those silos. You want the departments talking to each other. You want the departments aware of what each other's data is looking like and how they fit into those bigger pictures.
It's interesting you mentioned that silo concept. We still have traditional structures because people still understand them. Mm-hmm. But largely speaking, We work in multifunctional teams now. I myself am part of a multifunctional team trying to achieve certain strategic results. But you've got everyone from a finance person to a creative to a CEO in small multifunctional teams. I actually have two spaces. I have one, which is my office, where I have physical meetings because they are starting to happen again. But then collaborative spaces, we go down, we're all wearing masks, what have you. Mm-hmm. But we collaborate in multifunctional teams that totally disrespect hierarchy and departments.
And that almost makes a sense. You know, one of the criticisms against work from home is the lack of the water cooler, that the place where staff sort of bump in and serendipity happens. But if you've structured your business right and you've got that flow of communication and you've got that focus on the data, that will happen intuitively. And it doesn't need to be a physical water cooler. It can happen via the communication channels that exist and via the sense of people being happy to reach out across silos.
I'm still a believer in physical space. I think that for me what has changed and what will change is it doesn't make sense for people to sit in traffic to get to work to get through their emails. Mm-hmm. Or you know, it just makes absolutely no sense. And it certainly doesn't make sense to get in a plane to fly to another part of the country for a single meeting. These types of things more and more will happen digitally or at home. But I think that that ability to meet with people for collaborative type of thinking and the like, I think that there will still be a place that for quite some time to come. The office space has changed, as we know, that is for certain, mm-hmm. but I think there'll be a little bit of a bounce back in time when people realize that there are reasons that humans still like to cluster together and get together, and that's my true belief.
Yeah, we're social people. I take that absolutely. A quick last question, slightly off track. You've got the impact investing, which is part of the Fed group offering. It's your blueberries, your honey, your solar. The honey sold out, the solar in pre-buy. I imagine, and as I said, I've been in your offices. I've seen that set up there. I imagine that those sort of the impact, it probably has largely sailed through lockdown. I mean, there's undoubtedly been some challenges, but imagine how it was structured. The pandemic has slowed things, but they're still out. You're still delivering and managing.
Yeah, I think for us as a business, we actually had last month some of our record sales months in the history of the company, which is incredible. It doesn't mean that margins are the same because mm-hmm. we all know that interest rates have huge effects on our business, etc. But the impact farming was unbelievable because blueberries were still actually being exported and beekeepers were actually allowed to carry on throughout the pandemic to carry on doing their work. And solar, we had a slight reduction. We had buildings that didn't have the, full occupancy and the like in certain buildings. But largely speaking, those assets have carried on before. We've got machine learning telling us that panels are down and emergency crews could go down straight through the pandemic. If water was leaking in certain buildings, we knew. Being a high-tech business has made us a lot more robust, I think, for this changed world.
Yeah, and doing what they need to do. They belong in the alternative investment space. They need to act differently to markets. And I think they did exactly that during the period. That's their thesis in many senses. Granfield, CEO, Fed Group, appreciate the time this morning.
Business, finance, and investment news. MoneyWeb Now with Simon Brown on The Money. Also available on podcast.
We'd wanted to chat with ABSA, the ETP products. They're changing their NFGovy. That's the index that tracks the top 10 bonds issued by the South African government. And it's a change. What they're going to be doing, instead of reinvesting distributions, they will now pay out those distributions. Now, remember, those distributions are income tax. They're not dividend withholding tax because they're coupons and interest earned from bonds. It has no real financial effect on investors. Except, of course, if you bought this because you wanted the total return, effective 19 November, it'll now start paying out those dividends. So you might need to find a product that is more suitable for you. And I suspect we're probably going to see these perhaps with the other sort of ETFs over our South African bonds, because this is actually a note from the Prudential Authority earlier in the year. That's it for today. You'll find us live every weekday morning, 6:30 a.m. on the MoneyWeb website or the app. Podcast available from 7 a.m. Huge thanks to my team, Eddie and Cordora, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning contributions. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.